you're about to make a trade. Which you do you listen to? Is it, get optioning those options? Or let's do a little research. Learn more at finra.org/tradesmart.
Marshall's buyers are hustling hard to get amazing new gifts into stores, right up to the last minute. Like a designer perfume for that friend who never RSVP'd. Wishlist topping toys for her kids who came too. Mm-hmm. Belgian chocolates for the neighbor. A cozy scarf for your boss. And a wool jacket for your husband that you definitely did not almost forget. Marshalls. We get the deals. You get the good stuff. Even at the last minute. Whew. Find a Marshalls near you.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox. Welcome to the award-winning FCPA Compliance Report, the oldest podcast in compliance. In this concluding part four of our special four-part series of webinars I did with representatives from Diligent, these webinars are a great way for us to end 2025 and look into 2026. Over this four-part series, we'll look at due diligence, FCPA, export control, and sanctions under the Trump administration. I know you will get a lot out of this four-part podcast series in December, so I hope you'll listen to the entire series. Today I'm joined by Daniel Zemack, and we look at reinventing compliance for 2026 and beyond. Each of these podcasts come in at just under an hour. Daniel Zemack, we are thrilled to be here with you for a topic that we both not only enjoy talking about, but frankly, we think it's incredibly important for the compliance professional. Daniel, with that introduction from me, why don't you introduce yourself and tell the audience why we're here today.
Sure. Welcome, everybody, to Reinventing How Compliance is Done webinar. We're going to talk about a lot of what's happening within the compliance space, within the regulatory space, within the economy, with anything that's really changing and informing how we should be approaching and doing compliance and well beyond compliance and ethics and integrity, which we'll soon get to in the future now that we're, I think, at an inflection point. But let me introduce myself. My name is Daniel Zemack. I am the Senior Director of Product Marketing at Diligent. I've been in this space for about a decade now. And in my role, it's really my job to stay close to the market, talk to as many folks as possible, as many of you as possible, and understand what are the dynamics that are happening in the market right now? What are the dynamics happening within the compliance space, and how are compliance professionals and leaders approaching this? And what are the problems that we need to solve for you? And so I help with Diligent's overall product and go-to-market strategy when it comes to some of the solutions that we provide and the problems that we solve. But Tom, please, I know you don't need much of an introduction, but please introduce yourself.
Sure. And first of all, sorry for mispronouncing your name, but all Texans have a couple of characteristics. The first is we emphasize the first syllable of every word. So insurance, hurricane, and Zemack. So there, I am Tom Fox. I am the voice of compliance. I have the Compliance Podcast Network. And what that gives me the ability to do is to work with some very cool people, some very intelligent people like the folks at Diligent. And so we're going to bring to you today, or I hope we can bring to you today, why we both think compliance is at an inflection point and how you can move forward.
Yeah, Tom, by the way, you're in a camp about 50% of people that try to say my name emphasize that exactly the way that you did. By the way, just a quick aside, you know, I'm very jealous of your voice of compliance moniker, because when I was at Steel Compliance Solutions, which was acquired by Diligent previously, my informal moniker, which I did have on my LinkedIn for a little while, was the voice of steel. I can't use that anymore. So I am looking for a new one. I'm open to suggestions. Feel free to pop them in the chat. But before we roll into it, I want to ask you what we're to go through all the topics we're going to go through today. But just before we get into it, I'd love to know, Tom, from your perspective, I have a couple of young daughters. We always go through our high lows and buffaloes of our day or the week. Buffalo is high low, self-explanatory. Buffalo is the surprise, the thing that surprised you or was unexpected. This week, we're already almost to Friday, almost. What is your compliance-related buffalo that maybe surprised you or was unexpected or just interesting?
Unfortunately, it's a rather sad one because today the FBI announced a major series of arrests around a betting scandal involving NBA players and a gambling scandal, which included others beyond the NBA players altogether. And one of those players was Chauncey Billups. He is a Hall of Famer. He was an NBA Finals MVP for the Detroit Pistons. And most importantly, right now, he's the head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers. So when you have a head coach arrested for gambling allegations, that's very bad. And one of the NBA players, and more to the point that I think hopefully we may even bring up today, a player for the Miami Heat, Mike Rozier, was arrested. And the significance was allegations were brought forward of his throwing games as a part of a gambling scheme back in 2023, and the NBA investigated and cleared him. And it really drives home the point of your importance, rather, of your internal investigations. And I know you may have some words about that later on, but just a dark day for the NBA. Even I've already had someone text me and said, sports and compliance, you've been talking about it for a long time, and it came together today.
Yeah, this is when this kind of thing, the work that we do, goes mainstream when it hits in an area that a lot of people care about. I don't follow basketball too much, but what's your take on how this is going to affect the NBA in the near term?
It's just a horrible nightmare, reputational nightmare for the NBA, because the first question is, how much further does it go? Why wasn't this picked up by the NBA? How long had this been going on? Professional sports always has been run on trust. And if you don't have trust, you begin to go down a very slippery slope. And if there were investigative failures, that doesn't bode well either. And I think you and I may be talking about this down the road just for lessons learned for the compliance professional.
Yeah, I think I do have a couple comments a little bit later on just the importance of trust. Trust is so foundational with all of your stakeholders, and being everybody from the board down to your employees. And I think that the sports arena is a good allegory for just in general compliance and ethics and fairness, because the whole point is that there's a set of rules and that two teams or two people are competing on a level playing field. And if there is any sort of sense of impropriety or unfairness, that ruins the whole thing. And that eroding trust in that sport, I think, it takes a long time to get back from that, especially when people have so much loyalty and their identity a lot of times is rooted in the teams that they root for. So yeah, it's a sad day for the NBA. We probably do a whole case study on that, but why don't we roll into our agenda and talk us through some of the topics that we're going to be covering.
Sure. We're going to start with why certainly I think compliance is at an inflection point. Then we're going to look at the compliance maturity journey, fragmentation, and an interesting concept around fatigue and compliance. Very exciting for me to talk about connected compliance. I'm so glad we have that as part of our agenda. Obviously, the role of technology and moving from defensible to dynamic, from detect to prevent to truly proactive compliance. And then we're going to try and bring it all home.
All right. Let's roll into that then. And just to sort of tee you up, I do think that we are at an inflection point for compliance. I think it's evolving faster than ever. Regulations are changing. There's a lot of diversion in regulations. There's a lot of unpredictability, new board expectations, and expectations, I think, from consumers or, like I said, any stakeholders, whether you're an employee of a company or you're consuming a product of a company. It's just changing the playing field here, if you will. Tell us a little bit more about, I'd love to hear your view on what are you hearing from compliance leaders right now? What are you seeing as far as some of the external factors that are contributing to this inflection point?
So I want to start with a phrase that comes, I wish I had thought of it, but it comes from Carl Hahn, former chief compliance officer. And he said the question he would ask is, what's the business value? If I have a new compliance initiative, what is the business value? Because if there's no business value, then how are you going to get funding/resources? Why should the business even engage in it if there's not a business value? So I try now to look at everything through that lens. But starting in February, where the Trump administration put a pause on FCPA enforcement, Wei Chin, one of the top commentators in compliance, said it's time for compliance officers to up our game. And I took on that challenge, but I went in the direction of a technology upping your game and what now, today, can technology provide for the compliance professional. I wrote a book on that topic. And I think we're at a point where we have to show true business value by operating compliance at the speed of business. You mentioned, Daniel, all of the things compliance officers have to consider today. You did mention change. And if there's one hallmark of the current political, geopolitical situation, it's either change / chaos, because things are changing so quickly. We have to have structures, policies, procedures, and processes in place to adapt to change. If you lose an entire geo region that's available or was your key supply area, what are you going to do? If you're a new, one of your suppliers ends up on a list, you can't buy from them, what are you going to do? If you are now selling into a new area that's become incredibly high risk for reasons having nothing to do with your company, what are you going to do? And you have to have the policy, procedures, and technology in place. So I think we are at a true inflection point. And I think compliance needs to take a unified approach that you've called connected compliance. And I love that phrase. And we'll talk about it in a little bit. So I think it's time that we have to reevaluate everything. And I hope we can start some of that dialogue on this webinar.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the way that you put in it. I think policies and procedures now more than ever are so important, so foundational, because if there's any constant, it is change, right? You have to be prepared for what that change is going to be and then enable the business to operate quickly. And I think that's where you're connecting the what you're doing in compliance and ethics with that business value. It's no longer just about trying to avoid risk or proving the negative. Okay, we didn't have any fines this year. It's central to how organizations operate. What are you seeing, like, as far as how, when you speak to compliance leaders and how they're feeling? I hear a lot of fatigue, right? With all the change, what are you hearing? Is it isolated to, is it more prominent with specific industries, maybe with large supply chains that have just been uprooted, or certain regions? Or what's your take on that? And what are you hearing from compliance leaders and just what they're asking for right now?
Well, Daniel, it's probably no surprise that it's a spectrum of responses. Some are very excited at the opportunity. Some see technology as a true way that we can move compliance to our next level, all the way down to exactly what you said. People with fatigue, they don't feel like they have the resources either in terms of monetary support or headcount to move forward with some of these issues. Some of them are just overwhelmed by AI or the potential of AI, or how do I even use AI? One compliance officer said, could you send me some prompts to use for AI? So you have that really spectrum all the way in between. And this is where I'm excited to be paired with you and Diligent, because I know you're on the cutting edge of this. And with perhaps me talking about it, but more importantly, you showing people, this is what you can do. This is the capabilities we have that we can help you with. You can be a one man or one woman band of a compliance department all the way to a very large multinational organization and have tools available to you today that would have been unheard of 5 years ago.
Totally changing the game. So with that in mind, let's move on to what I like to call the compliance maturity curve or compliance maturity journey. And I think this really helps set up and frame the rest of the conversation that we're going to have today, because I think if 5 years ago, to your point, you put something like this in front of somebody and it's the view of an approach to compliance as a business function is completely different than what it is today and what the expectations are today as a business enabler and being able to prove business value. And it was harder because some of the tools we'll talk about just weren't quite there yet. But with the advent of AI, and especially AI agents that can do some of this work for you, generative AI that can generate policies for you, and then analytical AI that can identify trends across data and then actually proactively promote a prescriptive workflow or give you insights you wouldn't have had before, I think it's now more achievable than ever. This is where we see the compliance going from, I guess, reactive is really your check the box kind of compliance, right? This is, you might have some policies in place. You might have a phone number people can call on a hotline. You're doing the required training, but it's really that firefighting. It's when something comes up, you have to react to it versus proactive, which is integrating more of a risk-based program, paying attention to strategically where your risks in the business are, scaling a little bit bigger and having stronger governance practices and ethics being embedded a little bit more into the decision-making, to integrated compliance, which is now we're automating quite a lot with using AI, using new technical tools. You have the bandwidth and the insight. And I think that's the key to this, the key to the integrated integrity, the data and the insight that allows you to now use compliance as a strategy and part of embedded in the business operations. It is something, again, that interacts and touches the employees and creates trust with the employee base and is able to be reported seamlessly up to the executive team and the board so that they can make the right decisions. And I think data being that inflection point, but also creating a feedback loop so that you understand where the gaps are, can build a roadmap for getting better in the future and continually iterate. And that's something I think we'll touch on a little bit later, but the idea of from being only what we used to consider as defensible to more dynamic, dynamism, if you will, as defensibility, to say, we have a pulse on the whole program. Here's how we're getting better. Here are the next steps. Here's where we're going to be in 3 years. That's a truly defensible program. And you can really only do that if you have the kind of efficiency around some of these processes that used to be completely manual, and you have the data and the insights that you can connect. So with that being said, I want to do a quick poll. And that is really just where you feel you would place your organization today on the compliance maturity journey. Are you primarily reactive, focused on maybe just covering your regulatory requirements, having the basic policies in place, becoming proactive, taking more of a risk-based approach, improving governance, embedding ethics into the decision-making, or fully integrated where compliance is actually embedded into the culture and into the leadership culture of decision-making guiding the company? What do you predict, Tom?
I think we're going to see a mix of really of various different levels, less from the primarily reactive. I think most companies have moved beyond that. So really, I would think it'd be maybe 2 and 3 would be where we would have most of our answers or most of our affirmative responses, rather.
And I love your take on this as well. When you were looking at this curve, what does each of these stages really mean to you? I gave my opinion on defining each stage, but what do you think as far as, just tell me what you think it means and what are you hearing from compliance leaders?
Actually, you said something near the end that struck me as incredibly important that perhaps we don't talk enough about, and you used the word defensible. And I think when many compliance professionals hear the word defensible, they think, if the SEC comes knocking or I'm in some sort of investigation. But defensible is incredibly broad for the following reason. If you want to do business in certain industries, you have to have a defensible and transparent program. If you want to get a bank loan or if you want to access cash like private equity investment, or even if you want to go public, you have to have a defensible program that is transparent, that can be viewed because it's going to be assessed. That even includes your insurance coverage. insurance companies want to know about your compliance program. So it's not simply, oh, it's going to keep me out of trouble if the government comes knocking. It's literally to do business, particularly in the energy industry, but also tech, pharma, and a wide variety of other verticals, but also to have access to cash, whether that cash is stock, whether that cash is private equity money, whether that cash is a bank loan. Defensible programs are absolutely critical, but please don't think defensible means only have to show it if the government comes knocking or something else. And it could even save you reputationally if something happens in your company and you can respond quickly and efficiently with, here's what we came up with and here's the response we did to this issue. I really like your word defensible, and I ask our listeners to maybe think about the defensibility in a wide variety of contexts other than simply if the government comes knocking.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that really important tie-in back to compliance as a business enabler, right? Especially, I think there's a good case to be made of you want the thing you said about access to cash and credit and insurance. Like that is huge, right? For that's something you can put in dollars and cents and business leaders understand. There we go. Here it is. Oh, this is super interesting. I would have thought becoming proactive would have been the biggest piece of the pie here, but it's really split between reactive and integrated. What does that tell you?
Actually, over 50% are moving in the direction of your chart, Daniel. So I'm certainly comforted by that, but I would say that either boards or C-suite management doesn't understand the true power of a proactive compliance program, not simply to keep you out of trouble, but to actually do business better, faster, more efficiently in the changing world of today.
We're going to get, not to spoil it, we're going to get quickly to some recommendations around like, where do you start at the very end? I'll ask you this question, but I think something to keep in mind for those folks that are in that first stage of reactive, how do we get to some practical advice, maybe a little bit later on, how do we get to the next stage or the next stage and move up that curve? Let's move on and talk a little bit more about the problem. And I think this will, hopefully this resonates. I think this is really what is keeping most folks in that reactive state, is that fragmentation and the fatigue, of course, like we mentioned, but fragmentation of, if you don't have the right tools and they're not connected, they're not talking to each other, then it is really difficult, as we talked about data as that inflection point, to be able to understand and iterate where you should go next. What I'm hearing from most compliance leaders, when I say, what is the biggest pain point? They might say, oh, this specific aspect of my program. But from a high level standpoint, they go, nothing talks to each other. And I don't have the data that I have that I can use to communicate or tell my story to connect what I'm doing with business values, right? I'm wasting a lot of time trying to reconcile the data through various spreadsheets. It's exhausting. It's inefficient. There are information gaps, and that erodes trust if you can't rely on, if you don't actually have insights into how each part of your program is performing. And besides that, I'll get off this high horse in just a second. But I think it shows, to the point of trust, fragmentation in your compliance program also shows to all of your stakeholders, not only hamstrings you to be able to tell connected compliance, unified compliance story to the board with the right data insights that allow them to make the right decisions and steer the ship, but employees feel that as well. And I know just from past lives and then compliance leaders that I speak to about their engagement with the employees, if they have to access different systems that are fragmented, that don't seem connected, and they seem old, especially, that's a major trust issue, right? Because what does that say? If the expectations of most employees nowadays are having a sleek app on a phone or whatever. They interact with technology. Everybody interacts with technology all day, every day. And then if you try to give somebody a discount, and they interact within an ecosystem. I'm an Apple user. I interact within my Apple ecosystem. If you give somebody a disconnected experience with old outdated tech, or you give somebody a phone number to call on a piece of paper and say, that's our hotline, what does that say about you as compliance? Sometimes you can't help it. I think this is the biggest struggle that compliance leaders have, one of the biggest struggles compliance leaders have. But what I'm trying to get at here is this fragmentation erodes trust on a whole lot of different levels. So Tom, I'd love your reaction to that and your view of this problem.
Sure. So let me perhaps frame it the way the Department of Justice has talked to us about this concept of fragmentation literally since 2020, when they released the 2020 version of the evaluation of corporate compliance programs, where they said compliance function must have access to the data within an organization. Another way of saying you don't have access to your data, you're fragmented. The regulators recognize that as far back as 2020, and we're still, unfortunately, having to talk about this today. And the cost in this, from the regulatory perspective, can be catastrophic. But the theme we're trying to put forward of doing compliance at the speed of business through connected compliance, through upping your game, you cannot do if you're fragmented. And that is going to lead to, as you also articulated quite well, a loss of trust in your organization. So it's a great starting point, fragmentation leading to fatigue, and really fatigue not simply for a compliance professional, but literally for your customers who, remember, are your employees. What's the UX? If the UX is fatigue, then you've already lost the battle. It really seems to me that the regulators led the discussion on this. In many ways, we need to really try to focus on getting away from the fragmentation, but there are real costs in that here in 2025.
Yeah, I think it's a good segue to what connected compliance is, our next topic. Now, I have my own view of what connected compliance means, especially from a product solution view, right? We are, I think, at an inflection point ourselves at Diligent with the ecosystem that we're building. 2025 was table setting for us. We acquired Vault, which is our whistleblowing software. We acquired Spark Compliance, which is now our advisory services arm led by Christy Granthart. And I think both of those things are really critical elements to fill in some of the gaps that Diligent had before and to complement our third-party risk management and due diligence offering. Now, I'm not here trying just to pitch everything that Diligent can do, but really just explain the mindset and the logic behind why we made these strategic acquisitions and why we think it's going to result in a connected compliance program for our clients. And that includes also a really aggressive roadmap, which we're delivering on quite a lot. If I have time, I'll talk a little bit more about it by the end of the year, including disclosures into our Speak Up case management system. That means conflicts of interest. That means gifts and entertainment. That means also attestations from a policy point of view, and that complements our policy management solution, right? And so this is how we're starting to think about and approach connected compliance and everything that I just said as far as what we're building, the disclosure into the case management system. That's being delivered by the end of the year, more widely available in Q1. And so I think for 2026, I think the connected compliance, at least at Diligent from a solution standpoint, is going to become a reality. That's my spiel there. But I'd love, Tom, to kind of punt this over to you and ask you, just from your point of view, not necessarily product specific, but what does connected compliance mean to you and what are the advantages to it?
So I've always used one visual for these precise words, and that visual is connected, true connected. Because when you can connect your compliance to your business operations, that's when you start to move compliance at the speed of business operations. And with the tools available to us, to Diligent, to people like me now, to compliance officers now, we can connect compliance to the business operations. And if we go back to Carl Hunt's question, what's the business value? Well, the business value of connected compliance is more efficiency, more speed, more ability for your company to do compliance with third parties and be prepared for literally a pivot at the, you go to bed or you leave work on Friday and by Monday, there's a new list of persons or companies or countries rather you can't do business with. You're ready to respond. It's a huge plus for the business, and that's what employees are going to see. And then on the strategic side, that's exactly what the C-suite level that hopefully you're a part of as a CCO and the board level will see. So it's connecting third parties, it's connecting training, it's connecting your policies and procedures into true agility.
Mm-hmm. Like understanding, for instance, there's no reason that these data points should be disconnected. Understanding if you get a whistleblowing complaint, a serious whistleblowing complaint, or you see a particular trend in a specific region, jurisdiction, what have you, connecting that back to the number of policy attestations, the actual policies you have, then potentially gaps in those policies, the training that has been conducted, and rate of completion, all of those things can start to tell you a story, but only if you're actually connecting those data points. And then again, layering on using technology, which we'll get to layer on using like AI, for instance, that prescriptive layer. And here's what you do about it. So with that being said, we've got another poll that we're going to ask. What does the audience see as the most important element for strengthening your compliance program foundation? Where does it start? I think all of these things are important. I think we're going to get a spattering across the board, but it will be really interesting to see what the audience says. Tom, do you have any opinions, any hot takes here?
I think it's probably sort of, once again, 2 and 3, but I'll be very interested. I do agree with your analysis that we may get a pretty wide variety as well.
By the way, one question while we are waiting for this poll to be completed. You had a phrase, used a phrase when we were talking earlier, I think. You talk about visibility from shop floor to the boardroom. What does that look like in practice?
What that looks like in practice is true transparency. And transparency literally from the guys or women working on that shop floor all the way up to the boardroom. And that transparency will lead to trust. And the best example I can give you is many years ago when I was a CCO, I had literally a shipping clerk come to me and said, I was looking at these signatures on an end user certificate for someone we're shipping a part to overseas. And they're different companies, but the signatures look an awful lot alike and they're the same name. And that guy just trusted me enough to, he was looking and brought it to me, and it saved us from having a major problem because we were going to ship something to someone who wasn't who they said they were. And so when you have that kind of trust all the way down to the shop floor, that's essentially a whistleblower. And that's the kind of information you get in a true culture of speak up and listen up. You've crowdsourced your compliance program for information you would never be able to pick up.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing story. That's going to lead into, I think, technology's role in reinventing compliance. And I know you have a lot of takes on this and AI specifically, but that's something where technology can't necessarily replace. It can help you build that trust, right? But that trust being sort of the essential element and the central element overall, I think, throughout the organization. If you don't have trust, you really don't have it. Technology is great. There's a lot of efficiency gains, but you need that trust in order to have a truly integrated integrity, compliance, and ethics program. Defined ownership and accountability coming in at number one. Does that surprise you?
Actually, it does not. I thought that would lead it. But when you pair it with employee engagement, now you've got ownership, accountability, plus you have your UX, your customers engaged as well. So to have both of those at 75% really speaks quite well to me, Daniel.
All right. Thank you for participating in that poll. Let's talk about technology as an enabler here. Technology obviously changing very rapidly. The thing we can't ignore is AI, and not just generative AI, but agentic AI. Agents that start acting on your behalf to do things. I don't know if we're at the point of or at the comfort level enough to where a lot of folks would say, yes, I want agents to make decisions for me. But there is certainly a lot of efficiency gains when it comes to things like being able to draft policies, route approvals, identify, do deep research on third parties and identify risks in that way. And then, of course, connecting the data so that you have the most important insights at your fingertips without having to reconcile a bunch of different spreadsheets. But what is the biggest thing that you see AI having the most immediate impact on in compliance work?
Maybe a couple of things. One would obviously be speed. But even more important than speed, it's the ability to look at large amounts of data and synthesize. And fortunately, that's something that you can do as a compliance officer, or you can work with a company like Diligent to facilitate that, because you can safely and securely put your data in a ring-fenced AI that's not going to be open to the public, that's not going to go into the general ChatGPT ecosystem. And you can have your data, and you set a parameter of a floor, a ceiling of Z, and you tell the AI, all right, I want every piece of information that's below A and above Z. That's an anomaly. That's called a red flag. And that gives you the information to start looking at cases that might be where your spending is too much, where the marketing budget seems out of whack, where we're paying a third party a lot of money in a high-risk jurisdiction, whatever it may be. It can be in your supply chain as well. But that's really one of the, I think, most powerful tools, because you can do it safely, you can do it securely, and it's your own data that you're looking at so that you can figure things out, and you can do that almost on a continuous basis.
Yeah. You know, I think a couple of things here. We already talked about the employee experience, the UX of compliance, right? Potentially eroding trust and the cost of fragmented systems in that way. But just picking up on what you're saying here, what do you think the biggest misconceptions of AI are? What do you hear most often? This is a loaded question. What should we be afraid of it? And what are the costs of not adopting it?
The costs of not adopting it are keeping you in not the Middle Ages, but the Dark Ages. So I think the costs are extraordinarily high. We talked about a little bit earlier, both of us talked about how defensibility, and if you don't have AI, you're probably not going to be able to defend your program, certainly not as well as other companies. So I think the cost of not using AI is going to be quite high. On the flip side, on the security side, I really think that if you use a dedicated tool of a company like Diligent, or you create your own ChatGPT, you can do all of those things so that you can be safe and secure in this. And the biggest challenge compliance officers have, Daniel, is they don't know where to start. But it's really anything else. Take a defined process or project and test it. Create a sandbox. Take your gifts, travel, and entertainment expenses. Yeah.
Make it exist. Iterate on it.
Yeah. And we used to call GTE, or gifts, travel, and entertainment, the low-hanging fruit. Run a test with GTE. Look at all of your gift, travel, and entertainment spend in high-risk jurisdictions. And then you can expand it out. Perhaps you can get to all of your employees. And you can see what anomalies are coming up. But once again, that's only going to show you the anomalies. It's not going to tell you what happened. That's what you're going to have to do as a compliance professional.
Yeah, I think that it goes back to what we were talking about, what we touched on before, which is technology is as an enabler, but it's not replacing judgment, right? It's just giving you more information, giving you the right information, speeding up, making process more, much more efficient, and empowering you to make the right kind of informed decisions to help guide the business. Let's talk about, we already talked quite a bit about this. I think we skipped ahead a little bit, and this is my fault because I brought this up earlier on, but the defensible to dynamic. So Tom, on this slide, I just have one question for you. What does a truly dynamic compliance program look like in practice?
A dynamic program has moved from reactive to proactive. It's moved from detect to prevent. It's a prescriptive program that's going to prevent an incident from becoming either a legal violation or even perhaps a violation of your own internal policies and procedures. So it's really something that's moved to a true preventative program that stops something so you don't have to spend the time and money after it's detected to do an investigation and go down that road.
Yeah. So that's, you know, we're going back to the maturity curve here. You're talking about more of a proactive approach, embedding ethics within the decision making, using risk-based approaches throughout the process. And I take it even further and say, to me, dynamic, if we're moving toward that truly integrated integrity model, dynamic means the constant iteration and that feedback loop and setting a roadmap for every year, reevaluating that long-term and short-term roadmap based on the learnings and findings and the data that you have, paired with the strategic business priorities. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Set.
All right, let's bring it home because I know we only have really a couple minutes left and then we're going to do some Q&A. But when compliance teams feel overwhelmed, as you already mentioned, start anywhere, I think. But what is the place where you see most compliance teams starting or could benefit the most from to get the lowest effort, biggest lift when, let's say, we're moving from that reactive state to that proactive state?
Well, I think in perhaps another slide, I say, go down to see your CTO or your CISO and have a cup of coffee with them and find out what they're doing. And I had one friend and his shtick was pizza. He would always bring pizza and he got more meetings because he always brought pizza. So maybe take a pizza down to the technology office, but go down and talk to the folks you're doing work with in-house and see what they're doing. See what you can leverage off of what is already going on in your company and tell them, I've got this. I want to do a test. I want to do a test with gift travel and entertainment. I want to do a test with third-party vendor payments. I want to do a test with X and see what they can do to help you run that test. I mentioned earlier the sandbox and the low-hanging fruit. You don't have to do it on your own. You don't even have to call Daniel or Tom Fox. You can go down the hall or do a Zoom call with your CTO and say, I need to do this. Where do I start? And you're probably going to find they'll be thrilled to work with you because they've been wanting to do this all along. And now you've come down and given them that opportunity. Then you can build out to see, okay, what's available at Diligent? What's available in the marketplace? How can I leverage my experience from this to really moving my compliance program to a connected compliance, to a really unified system that will allow me to operate my compliance program at the speed of business? But start small and start with a conversation.
Yeah. So I think it's obviously going to depend on the type of business and where the risk is. And a lot of times it's going to start with a risk assessment, which should be done every now and then, right? To understand where in the business you need to focus and what are the strategic priorities of the business. But if I could distill it into just a short sentence of what you're saying is have a conversation. That's where you start. Let's do one more quick poll here. Actually, we got just a couple more, but one more here that I just want to get a quick pulse check from the audience on what your top compliance modernization priority is for 2026. I always to ask this question. That's usually when I sit down with any compliance leader, I start with, I might phrase it in different ways. What's top of mind? What's your biggest headache? What actually do you have plans for next year? And I think it really tells you about the problem, tells me about the problem. Again, that's my job. And what people are actually putting time and resources behind. I think that says quite a lot, not only about what compliance's priorities are, but what the business is willing to back. So this will be interesting to see. Is it unifying disconnected systems and data? Is it enhancing risk visibility and reporting to leadership? Embedding ethics and culture into everyday operations, strengthening governance and oversight structures. These can mean different things to different people, but yeah, will be interesting to see. What, Tom, I'm going to ask you every time, any predictions, or I don't want you to lead the witness to say advice, but gut feel on this?
I think we're going to see a really wide range throughout all four of these, Daniel. I think these are things that different compliance programs have different priorities, and they're all within the questions you've asked or the poll you put in front. So I would not be surprised to see a general distribution throughout the four.
Okay. Oh, strengthening governance and oversight structures. You know what that kind of tells me? I would assume, I could be wrong, I'm assuming a lot of that is linked to AI and AI governance. You think that's right?
I not only agree with that 100%, but I would say that it tells me that these professionals, these compliance professionals, are actually using AI, and they're now struggling with the governance and oversight, so that it tells me a lot of people are already embedding AI into their compliance programs in some way.
That's interesting. So let's go on to the bottom line, and I'll let you do a quick recap here, Tom. In the meantime, if there are any questions that from the audience, feel free to put those questions in the chat. We can start answering them right now. And we'll have one more poll just before we wrap up. But bottom line, brass tacks, Tom.
Brass tacks. Let me go all the way over to the far right, because I touted this one earlier. Go down and take a cup of coffee to your CISO or CTO and start a conversation. That's the easiest and best way if you're truly at that starting point. But some of the things we've talked about in this presentation include breaking down silos. The regulators expect it, and I think your business partners are going to expect it. Always remember, who's the user here? Who's the customer, and what's the customer experience? So what's the UX? Daniel is great about his thoughts on unifying your program and connected compliance. This is something that is going to be absolutely critical, coupled with transparency. And think about speak up, listen up, and crowdsourcing from your own employee base. Strategic use of technology. You don't have to be overwhelmed by bringing in the top AI program, but you should take these steps that we've got on the far right. And it starts with being a part of the discussion at your company around AI. Always remember the human in the loop, and where your most man hours going on admin. That might be a great place to start. To prevention and beyond, certainly Buzz Lightyear would want to go to infinity and beyond, but I want to go to prevention and beyond. How can you move to that? And how can you then have continuous improvement? Because that's where you're going to have the really incredible use of compliance to speed business. And then think about regulatory changes, game them out, and be ready if something happens over the weekend.
Yeah. Be ready. Always one something that I really liked as a takeaway from one of my last webinars I did with Christy was, whenever you're building that roadmap, always build in time for that disaster or that fire that you have to fight. Don't go to 100%. You know that there's going to be something unpredictable that comes up. Just, we're going to ask you, of course, if you want to hear more from us. I just have one more visual to show you around a unified compliance program. And this is, again, diligence thinking. And this is not a straight product pitch, but I want you to know that we have these solutions. And this is sort of how we think about what a unified compliance program looks like. And if you could use your imaginations for a minute, because I said we're doing a lot with an aggressive roadmap. I'm not going to get into that. I don't have time to get into that today. And this isn't a product-driven webinar. We are going to have a What's New in Compliance webinar on November 20th, where I'll go a little bit deeper into what's in the roadmap, if you'd like to see that. But just imagine embedding AI throughout this process for third-party risk management using deep research, not just deep research from AI, that which can do a lot, but combining that with proprietary data sets and training it in an applied way to act as your own AI. I don't want to use that term because we have a product to name this, but AI investigator, if you will, right? This, I think, is changing the game. So you're going to see more about that if you join the webinar on November 20th. When it comes to case management, connecting your speak up, disclosures, gifts and entertainment, as well as policy attestations, and tying those activities together around who's reviewing your policies, who has access, do you even have, where are the gaps in your policies in the specific region that's leading to this hotspot of whatever activity you're seeing. And then from a policy standpoint, imagine being able to upload all of your policies to an agent and it doing a full complete gap analysis and saying, based on where you're operating, doing business, where your employees are, where you're selling into, and the jurisdictions we want to pay attention to, here are some of the gaps, not only in the gaps of the policies that you may or may not have, but the gaps within your policies. Let's change this language for you and automating that, all with you in the loop. So there's that, all of that is real. And we're going to have further announcements coming out. So if you are interested from a product perspective, again, November 20th, What's New webinar. If you like more follow-up immediately, let us know. And we're also just a quick plug for Diligent Elevate next year. We're planning a compliance day that is a specific compliance track. And would love, you might, if you're signed up for Diligent Emails, you might get a survey, because we would love to hear from you on what are some of the topics. Was today's topic useful? What do you want to hear more of? And so on. So I'll just say that as my last remark. Tom, any way that, or how can folks get in touch with you if they want to?
Sure. So the best way is probably LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn all day, but you can also reach me through my website, the Compliance Podcast Network, found at www.compliancepodcastnetwork.net.
Sounds great. And with that, I think that's a wrap. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for Reinventing How Compliance is Done for 2026 and beyond. This was really fun, Tom. I really enjoyed my time. I hope to do it again soon.
I do as well. Thank you, Daniel. The FCPA Compliance Report is the longest-running podcast in compliance, having been founded in 2012. Finally, I hope you'll check out my latest podcast, AI Today in 5, where I look at 5 stories of AI and compliance literally every day of the week. I know you'll enjoy this new podcast. I hope you will join us again next week, where I will be joined by Stephanie Font to take a look at the expansion of due diligence to a new category of parties through export controls and sanctions and the redesignation of cartels as foreign terrorist organizations.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.